He just sees the field. He is a quick processor, you know, good decision maker, obviously. And he knows when the party's over. He knows when to throw it away or win the scramble and not force it in harm's way. And we're not built right now to overcome a lot of turnovers. And he knows that. And so we're trying to stay on schedule, be efficient, stay ahead of the chains. And he's really done a nice job so far of doing that.
Cliff Kingsbury yesterday out in Arizona. That was a question I think John Keim asked him about, why isn't he throwing an interception? He said, whoa, just stop. Like, don't jinx it. But he also described the 27-yard touchdown pass to Terry McLaurin as essentially the players, drawing up the play for him. And sometimes you just rely on players to make plays. I like Cliff Kingsbury so far. When you're 2-1 and you're scoring points and you're not punting, it's easy to like the offensive coordinator. But I think that there's a lot just to like about his brain, his creativity, his relationships with, key players like the quarterback. This may have been a match made in heaven. It's still early to come to that conclusion, but so far so good. We are expecting Ben Standing to join us from Arizona. Do we have him? We do. We have Ben Standing, who joins us live from Arizona. You've been out there all week, haven't you, Ben?
I have. I was just on local Phoenix radio, and they said, "Have you been out here when we've had our really big heat wave?" I'm like, so it's every day here. It's like over like 110 or around like 110, and even for Phoenix people, they're like, "Nah, this is too much."
Well, I was in Las Vegas back in whatever that was. I was there for the hottest day on record at McCarran. It was 120-something. Denton, remember? What was the I walked outside because I knew it was supposed to be potentially the hottest temperature in Las Vegas history, and I wanted to feel what it felt like. And it was hot. It was really, really hot, even though it's a dry heat. I still think what we get here in the summer is worse. I think the humidity is worse than a dry heat.
Oh, yeah, no. Last night I was out getting something to eat. It was 98 degrees at like 8 o'clock at night. It wasn't nearly as bad as some of the days I experienced in D.C. So, yeah, no, it's just a lot. Fortunately, they're not practicing outdoors. They've been practicing inside the bubble. And, when we're there, we're mostly in the bubble or in our media space, so I shouldn't really complain. But yes, it's just warm out here. That is very true.
120. I was there in Vegas on the record-setting temperature day, 120, at least the airport, which I now know it's called the Harry Reid Airport. All right. What's your thoughts on Sunday? Trey McBride officially out. I saw you just tweeted that. That's big, but of course Eckler's out for Washington. But give me your thoughts on how they go into Glendale and get a win.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, obviously you got to feel pretty comfortable with the offense. It's almost hard. I can't even say it's hardly perfect because, they score on every possession now. But obviously, it's still a little bit of a work in progress. No Eckler. They'll have to figure out how to replace him. I'm guessing they'll bring up one of the running backs from the practice squad, and that may be the person to get the second most with McNichols as the sort of fill in the gap guy. But we'll see how that goes. But look, I think this is going to come down to the defense. I mean, as much fun as Jaden Daniels was in this last game, he had to have such a spectacular game to avoid a loss because the defense couldn't stop anyone. The receivers that they have faced this year, Mike Evans, 2 touchdowns, Malik Nabers, 100 yards and a touchdown, Jamar Chase, 2 touchdowns, and now here comes Marvin Harrison Jr., maybe the best rookie receiver this year, and Kyler Murray's obviously been a threat. So, if the defense can't slow them down, you have to imagine Tressway will play more than the holder at some point here. So I think it comes down to that. Obviously, if the offense can keep avoiding turnovers, Jaden Daniels is efficient and effective, then, again, they should be able to put up some points, even though the Cardinals, like in terms of DVOA, are a top 10 defense. So it'll be an interesting challenge. The Cardinals are also without one of their starting defensive linemen, so it's going to be a little thinner up front. But, at some point, Washington's going to have to stop somebody to get a win.
Yeah, for sure. Arizona, what did you say about Arizona's defense? They're 23rd DVOA defense.
Oh, did I read that? Maybe I read that wrong then. Apologies.
Yeah, that's right. They've struggled, and they really look vulnerable up the middle against the run. I would say that that's an opportunity on Sunday. No, Eckler will be big. So just big question about the first 3 weeks. What's more surprising to you, that they're terrible on defense or that they're really good, it appears, offensively?
I think it's got to be the offense, right? I mean, regardless of what you thought of Jaden Daniels, you know, however positive you want, I don't know that anybody could have imagined he would be clicking as much as it has been through three games with, you know, really growth over the last, I'd say, six quarters. The defense, I mean, I think we knew the cornerback situation was going to be very questionable, and, you know, were they going to be able to generate much of a pass rush, particularly on the edges? Ironically, of course, it's been the tackles that haven't given them anything in that regard. So, you know, I'm to the extreme that the defense has been not good, maybe that's slightly a surprise, but even then, we knew there were a lot of changes, and, you know, we've also seen this defense last year when it was a struggle. So, yeah, the offense to me is far more surprising just in terms of, you know, how efficient it's been so far.
Denton, what would your answer to that be? We don't have Denton.
Yes, you do Denton, have me. Sorry. Someone walked in here. Say it one more time.
What's more surprising, terrible on defense or really good on offense?
Really good on offense. Terrible on defense should have been a given after last year.
That's Ben's answer. My answer would be the opposite. I thought that they had a chance to be good on offense, not what they were certainly on Monday night. So that's surprising for sure, how far along they are, it would appear. But I did not expect them to be historically awful on defense through the first three games. I thought there would be improvement this year. It was clearly hope, not reality. All right. No Eckler on Sunday. Who else is out?
Cleveland Farrell's out. I don't know that there is anybody else that we're really on big watch for. I mean, Emmanuel Forbes, obviously, until he plays, he hasn't played. But, you know, certainly seems like he's trending in the right direction. If he gets through today at practice, you know, I would imagine, you know, he'll be ready to go. But, you know, we'll see what happens after today. But yeah, I mean, you know, the Eckler one is, I think, the biggest question for sure. They've got at least a few other options to throw at the Cleveland Farrell one, but, you know, this is a, Eckler's a unique player. Again, they have McNichol, who we saw obviously could help with the blocking, but production wise with the ball, I don't know that there's a ton there. Maybe they bring Michael Wiley up off of the practice squad. Obviously he had some good moments in camp as an undrafted free agent. But, you know, also a very inexperienced guy, and that could be a little scary in the backfield with Daniels. But, yeah, they're going to have to find ways to replace Eckler's production, not just on offense, but, you know, the return game. I mean, you know, had the week two touchdown called back last week, the 62-yarder that counted. I mean, that's been obviously a very big deal for them, so they'll have to figure out who's going to help there as well.
Have they called up a running back yet? Have they called up a Wiley or a Rodriguez yet?
That doesn't happen until Saturday.
So, what do you think they'll do?
I mean, in my head, Wiley is the Eckler replacement. Rodriguez is the Robinson replacement. So right. I would assume Wiley. But, you know, again, that's assuming that they want to try to have somebody out there, you know, both maybe as a returner as well as that sort of slippery running back type. So, yeah, if that's what they want, I would think Wiley would be the guy.
Talking to Ben Standing. Of course, Ben is on X on Twitter, at Ben Standing. He writes for The Athletic. And Ben has an excellent podcast that you should listen to called Last Man Standing. And you can get that wherever you get your podcast. So, you know, we're all hopeful that what we saw Monday night was what we'll continue to see. I would imagine they're going to punt at some point, and I would imagine they're going to throw an interception or turn the ball over at some point. But still, a lot of encouraging signs offensively. Defensively, awful, historically awful over the first 3 weeks of an NFL season. They are so dead last in the league. Like, you know, number 31, the Rams, they're not even close to where Washington is. And I think the solution is the discussion here. You know, I'm sure they're trying to come up with a solution. As fans, we're trying to figure out what the solution is. What is it? Is it time for these guys to come together, communicate better, Joe Witt to get a little more experience? Is it a big personnel change? How do they change the course that they've set out defensively to something more positive?
Well, I guess I'll be talk about it in a way by mentioning the offense, right? I mean, the offense, obviously, Jane Daniels had a very good start. We see what the running backs are in Terry. But, you know, overall, you know, there's a lot of sort of bit parts that Cliff Kingsbury is trying to piece together, that, you know, the other receivers besides Terry, some questions on the offensive line. The tight end room is, you know, interesting, but it's, you know, not necessarily dynamic yet. But he's found ways to be able to piece it all together, in part because they've been able to do what they wanted. Jaden Daniels is effective throwing. The run game has worked. All the options are kind of available, right? Well, you go to the defense, it's like the exact opposite. They can't stop anything. They're giving up yards on the run, on the ground. And obviously the secondary at corner is pretty thin. I think that it's, you know, easier said than done, I guess. But, you know, if John Allen, Daron Payne, and that Bobby Wagner in that front could slow down the run game, that gives them more options then to help with the passing game for putting teams in, you know, second and third and long. But without that, I just think their deficiencies, the way they can be covered up on offense, they can't be covered up on defense. So I think, you know, they've got to figure out a way, because I don't see how the corners aren't going to get better, I don't think. Maybe Forbes does, but, you know, I don't see some major growth here. But up front, that's where I think they should have more production happening with those tackles. Johnny Newton starting to play more. He led the defensive line with four tackles last game. You know, Bobby Wagner and Frankie Louvre were flying around, but it just all hasn't synced up yet. So, again, not saying it's Allen and Payne solely, but whoever is, you know, whatever's got to happen to make the run defense improve, I think I would kind of start there, because I just don't think there's only so much they're going to be able to do at cornerback this year.
I totally agree with that. I think that the getting gashed in the run the last 2 weeks has really made everything else even more difficult. But I'm wondering, because you gave Cliff Kingsbury some credit for putting these pieces together. And, you know, other than the quarterback right now and a couple of the pieces you mentioned, Terry, Eckler, et cetera, it's not like, you know, he's assembling, you know, the some of the better offensive teams in recent years in terms of talent. Is there any thought that part of what's going on defensively is that Joe Witt Jr.'s new to being a defensive coordinator and calling plays?
I don't know. I mean, maybe to some degree, but, you know, I think, you know, again, did Allen and Payne have their best years last year? I would say no. Right. So it's not like they were coming off Pro Bowl years and now this is happening. So, you know, let's see. I think we need to see a little bit more from them to get going. And sure, I would imagine that Joe Witt Jr. is not able to fully call what he would want, because there are too many questions. Right. If they're not going to get a pass rush, then, you know, it's really hard, you know, to deal with this cornerback situation that he's in. So I don't know. I mean, it's only been, you know, three games. Obviously, it's hard to judge almost anything definitively, but I'm not going to put this on him quite yet. Again, the personnel, just, we can talk about hard work all you want, but at some point, the personnel is what it is, and the corner room, you know, is pretty rough right now. I mean, the fact that Noah Igbinoghi, a guy who was a former first-round pick, and he's just bounced around the league, though, for most of his career, and he's being viewed as one of one of their top three, and then sort of the same thing with Forbes, right? Yeah, there's talent, but, like, it hasn't happened yet, as we know, and he's being viewed as a guy that's kind of got, needs to be out there. So I think there's only so much you can do there, but the front seven, I think they've got to get more out of that group, both against the run defense as well as in the pass rush.
Do you see a player on either side of the ball that, you know, has played well, but they're excited to see more of? You know, I was curious as to what they thought of Johnny Newton. I think McCaffrey obviously stepped up. We knew that he was open against New York, didn't get those opportunities. But some of those players, are they excited about what they think they're going to see here over the next, you know, few weeks with some of those guys? And if so, who?
Yeah, I think last week you asked me some version of this. I think I said Ben Sinnott, I think, was close. And
yes,
then last week,
because
there were some opportunities for him there. This didn't quite click. You know, I think they liked a little bit of what they got out of Javonte Jean-Baptiste. I mean, I don't like, yeah, you know, I'm not saying he's a future star, but I think they were, you know, not displeased with a seventh round pick and what he was able to do for them. And this isn't exactly what you're talking about there, but every week they definitely rave about Quan Martin, because even though the secondary is kind of getting...
He played well.
Yeah, you're right. Because, I mean, he sort of gets lost in the shuffle. You know, the secondary hasn't played great. Jeremy Chin, arguably off to a bit of a slow start, but Quan Martin's been a guy who's continued to make plays. And, you know, it's one of those things where it'll probably stand out more when the group as a whole is performing better. Right now it gets a little bit lost, but yeah, he's one of those guys that looks, you know, more and more like a future building block going forward.
Yeah. All right. Who do you have and why?
Yeah, I mean, look, last week I was definitely wrong. I mean, I feel like I almost like wasn't wrong, because the Bengals couldn't get stopped, and that was the justification for going that way. But obviously, the offense was Washington's offense was just better. Boy, this is a tough one. I mean, I think the Cardinals have been, you know, they're coming off a tougher week offensively, but I think this Kyler Murray is, you know, he's off to a pretty good year. I think he's due for a special game. The Kyler Murray, Cliff Kingsbury aspect of this is interesting. I'm not going to discount Jaden Daniels at all and what this group's doing, but, you know, at home, you know, I think the Cardinals are a pretty decent team, and I think Kyler Murray for this defense is going to be a tough one to stop. So, you know, I'll go like Cardinals 31-27.
Thank you. Enjoy it this weekend. I'll talk to you on Monday.
Awesome, man. See ya.
Ben Standing, everybody. My smell test next when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. Obviously, underdogs in the NFL are barking loudly this year, especially the bigger underdogs, 5.5 points or more. It's been an absolute feast. I had four of those teams last week. All four of them not only covered, they won outright. The Broncos, Giants, Panthers, and Commanders had all, those are the four biggest dogs on the NFL card I had. They all won outright. Last week overall, because college basically broke even, 8-7, so I'm up one unit, 23-22-1 on the year through 4 weeks of football picks. Tomorrow, I've got more plays than I do on Sunday. Most of you don't like to hear that. There's not a lot on the NFL card that's super obvious this week. Let's start with tonight. Tonight there is a game in Miami. I'm assuming it's a go. Miami didn't get hit super hard, I don't think, by the Hurricane Helene. Look, the Canes are really good. In Cam Ward, they've got the front runner for the Heisman Trophy right now. They destroyed Florida in the opener, and they've never looked back. They beat the team that almost knocked off or was right there with Bama in Tuscaloosa, USF, 50-15. They're actually down in the first half in that game. They've been a covering machine, covering easy against Florida, Ball State, and USF. They were laying 19.5 this time yesterday against Virginia Tech tonight. That line's down to 18. There is super sharp money on Virginia Tech, and the public loves Miami in this game. The Hokies coming off another loss, this one to Rutgers. They lost the opener to Vanderbilt. Their only two wins are against Marshall and ODU. I actually thought, Denton, when I saw this game, I'm like, is that line a little bit high? Not because I'm looking for value. I'm never looking for value. I'm looking for the biggest contrarian play out there possible. And it's come down to 17.5, 18. I've got an 18 out there. and the public's lined up on Miami. Go Hokies tonight, plus the 18. Let's go to tomorrow. Look, this is all about recent impressions, typically, this time of year. Navy beat Memphis last week. Navy is undefeated. They're 3-0 on the season. They are unstoppable offensively. UAB has lost two straight games, and Navy's only laying 3.5 at UAB tomorrow. I'll take UAB plus the 3.5. Baylor lost to Colorado on that Hail Mary that forced overtime, and then they lost in overtime. That's the last time we saw Baylor. The last time we saw BYU, they destroyed K-State last week, 38-9. And yet Baylor this week, a 3-point favorite over BYU. I'll take the Baylor Bears laying the points. Auburn has been pretty bad so far this year. They lost last week at home to Arkansas. That was their second home loss. They lost to Cal a couple of weeks ago. They're playing Oklahoma, who lost to Tennessee, understood, and that's the last impression of Oklahoma. But in this game, the line reeks. Auburn's the favored team. It's one of the biggest public played bets of the weekend. The public looking for Oklahoma to bounce back. I'll take Auburn minus the 1.5. Last week, Colorado, I had them in the smell test. They got it done in overtime. They needed a Hail Mary to get to overtime. They're playing UCF. UCF Denton looks like a pretty good team. They beat TCU last week, rallied to win 35-34 two weeks ago. They're coming in off a bye week. They're laying 14 to Colorado. I mean, Colorado has been a public darling going back to last year, a little bit less this year, but the public loves the Buffaloes getting two touchdowns. I'll take UCF laying the 14. This, to me, is the line that reeks more than any this week. It is the game that is opposite Georgia-Bama in the same time slot, 7:30 Saturday night. Penn State laying 17.5 against undefeated Illinois, who beat Nebraska on the road last week. I think Penn State's really good defensively. Public loves Illinois as a massive underdog in Happy Valley. I'll take Penn State and lay the 17.5. There are more 18s out there than 17.5, so I'm not going to buy that key half point down to 17. I'll stick at 17.5 to make it fair. And then lastly, Boise is a 7-point favorite late Saturday night against Washington State, who is undefeated on the season. Boise's thought to be, you know, one of those teams that could be in the non-Power 4, non-Power 5, whatever it's called now, playoff spot. They lost to Oregon by 3. Laying a big number to Washington State, who's undefeated. I'll take Boise laying the 7. Let's go to Sunday for an NFL card that is really light on sort of obvious anti-public action. The biggest public side of the day is Pittsburgh. They're undefeated. They're playing a Colts team that's been struggling, even though they did win that game last week against the Bears. Pittsburgh's laying a mere 1.5 on the road. So I'll take the Colts plus the 1.5. I can't find super big underdogs this week to back because they're not. It's almost like the public has picked up on it and they're playing some of these big dogs. The Rams, after beating the 49ers, go to Chicago, who has looked terrible recently, and Chicago's favored by 3. I'll take the Bears minus the 3 because the average bettor thinks the wrong team is favored. And that is it in the NFL this week. Really, the only two games last night was close, but I didn't fire. Recapping, Virginia Tech tonight, plus 18. UAB against Navy. By the way, I'm buying the half point there, plus 3. Baylor, minus 3. Auburn, plus 1.5. UCF, minus 14. Penn State, minus 17.5. Boise, minus 7. And then on Sunday, the Colts, plus 1.5. And the Bears, minus 3. against the Rams. Bill Barnwell from ESPN will join us next, and then we will finish up the show with our Washington-Arizona predictions. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team 980. Getting ready to get into week four. It started last night with the Cowboys and Giants in a rather odd game. The Cowboys won 20-15. Aubrey missing that field goal helped a lot of people, hurt a lot of people. Bill Barnwell loves the NFL and writes prolifically about the NFL. Love having him on the show, and he joins us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, at Bill Barnwell. Of course, he covers the NFL for ESPN. Before we get into Washington, I wanted to just, first of all, compliment you on a lot of your stories. I love reading you, but the dual threat quarterback story from a couple of weeks ago was actually one that I've been waiting for. I was surprised that you hadn't written something like this before, but I guess with passing yards being down, that may have been the reason for getting to it. But for those that didn't read it, what are your big takeaways from this era, which kind of started in 2012-ish, maybe Cam Newton in 2011, where, you know, we've got more college football and more dual threat quarterbacking into the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, it is really something I think that has become ubiquitous and something I think we haven't sort of take for granted now. I mean, you know, if you go back 30, 40 years, you were getting one player a decade who was a dual threat at quarterback, where he might be a threat to run with the football. You know, you go back to Randall Cunningham, which would have been right when I was first becoming aware of football. You know, there was one Randall Cunningham and nobody else like him in the NFL. There was one Michael Vick and nobody else like Michael Vick. In recent years, like you said, we've had Cam pop up, but really I go back to the class of 2018 and Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen, two very different quarterbacks with different bodies. They run differently, but they're essential parts of the league now. I mean, Lamar Jackson's a two-time MVP. Josh Allen, obviously at this point, is the favorite to win MVP. We're still early days, but he's been the best player in football so far this year. And when I looked around the NFL, Kevin, I saw, you know, in week one, eight different quarterbacks who were involved, not just as scramblers, not just like a Fran Tarkenton, right, where you're going to extend the play, but like they're dialing up run plays for you in the offense. Like there's quarterback power. They're running veer. They're running bass. They're running the stuff, you know, where it's not just even zone read, like a Robert Griffin offense. Like they're running stuff where you know you're getting the football as the quarterback, not just in short yardage, not just as a gimmick, but like a fundamental part of the offense, not only to have you carry the ball because you're good at it, but to change the numbers on defense, slow down linebackers, slow down edge rushers, get your running back led run game going as well. And that would be insane to someone who was watching the league 40 years ago and had not watched since. That is a really fundamental change. And I think it informs a lot of the conversations we're having right now. You know, why are running backs not getting paid as much? Well, part of that is because quarterbacks are a bigger portion of the run game than they ever were before, especially near the goal line. So running backs can't, you know, it's harder to have that 20-touchdown, 25-touchdown season that a guy like Sean Alexander or LaDainian Tomlinson might have had earlier in their career. Why is scoring down? Well, quarterbacks are running the ball more often. Teams are running the ball more often. And so the clock's moving faster. In week one, there's about an average of about 60 plays per game for either side. 4 years ago, that was 64 plays per game. That might not sound like a big difference, but over the course of the full season, that's like missing an entire game's worth of snaps. You know, that is the difference between the fastest team in the league and the slowest team in the league on a week-to-week basis. So, you know, we're seeing scoring go down because teams are running fewer plays. The clock is running more often after these run plays.
Right.
You know, and I think in the big picture, Kevin, and we can talk about this all day, but in the big picture, the thing I would say is you think about high school games and college games and how many quarterbacks in the past would have been moved off of the position because you would have said, hey, you're a great athlete, but you're not a quarterback. Go play wide receiver, you know, go play running back, go play cornerback, go play a different position because you're not going to be considered a quarterback at the NFL level because, you know, a significant portion of what you do is running the football and they're not going to let you do that. That is no longer the case. Teams are going to recruit for that at the college level, and they're going to do that at the pro level. I mean, pro offenses look more like high school and college offenses now than they did 30, 40 years ago. And so that, to me, is a really fundamental shift. It's going to change how players are coming through the league. And, you know, I wouldn't be shocked 10, 20 years from now if it was more like half the league had running quarterbacks. I don't think this is a fad. I think this is not going away. I think it's becoming more an essential part of offenses, especially as defenses now are trying more and more to take away big passing plays.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting to hear you talk about it, because in 2012, being kind of, you know, front and center as fans to the pistol being implemented, the quarterback being not just a part of a true dual threat quarterback, not just in the red zone like Carolina had run with Cam Newton the year before, but, you know, they're lining up in the pistol first and 10 from the 20. And they're, as Mike always explained, Mike Shanahan used to always explain, this is 11 on 11 football. And he explained the idea that when the quarterback hands the ball off to the running back, you've got nine blocking 11, you know, and the runner is the 10th. With the quarterback, there's a distinct advantage, and you just used the word fad. I mean, if I had a nickel for every person in 2012 that said, this is the wildcat, or this is just the latest fad, it'll get figured out. And I remember Shanahan saying this. He's like, oh, no, no, this is here for good. This is a major advantage in the run game, and everybody benefits, including the running backs and the quarterbacks through play action when they are presented as a run threat. But here's and I want you to kind of talk about, you know, the conclusion to all this, because since 2011, 2012, and you say 2018, but if you go back to 2012, when you really had quarterbacks being used as designed runners and option runners in the game, we've only had one of those teams reach the Super Bowl. It was the 49ers that year with Kaepernick. And it's been a problem for Baltimore, as an example, if they're behind and they have to throw the football. So the question is, can one of these teams go through the postseason and win the Super Bowl?
Well, I mean, look at the Eagles, right? I mean, Jalen Hurts came within a couple drives of winning the Super Bowl. I mean, that would have been – and he was the best player on the field in that game to me. I think Chris Jones actually was the best player.
He was as Jalen a Hurts passer, though, that player. Day.
Right, and that's the thing. I think you have to have both. I think it gives you a – I go back to what Kyle Shanahan typically does with his offenses, which is he wants to keep his quarterback out of third and long – drop back passing game as much as possible, because that's when you get the exotic defenses. That's when you get, you know, the looks that you're not expecting. That's when you get creative coverages. Like, you want to keep your quarterback out of that. And so he drafted Trey Lance, who was a guy who, with very brief time as Niners quarterback, was going to be a heavy play action quarterback run game, staying out of third and long, because he had incredible athleticism and he also changed the numbers for you on offense. And I think, you know, with Jalen Hurts is probably the best example where, yes, he was part of the quarterback run game, but yes, he also threw at a high level. And I think for Lamar, you know, there's a lot of things that come into play. I don't think that kind of quarterback innately can't be a successful quarterback throwing the football in situations where you need to get completion. I just think, you know, that's a question about Lamar and his ability. I think there's questions, of course, about, you know, we've had the conversations about the offense, about the receivers. You know, does he have that great receiver? I mean, if Zay Flowers doesn't fumble, do we think about that team differently? To me, I think is, you know, we've only had a couple of seasons where the Ravens were playing at a high enough level. I think Lamar deserves that criticism as much as I think Lamar is a Hall of Fame player. But, you know, I think I would put that on individual players, not on that archetype as a whole. But I do think until someone does it, I think it's a very fair question to ask.
Well, and there's also the possibility that you can front run your way through a postseason, you know, as a one seed, playing two games, playing a Super Bowl and never trailing and never really having to be in that situation where you're down two scores and are forced to throw the football. That's always a possibility, too.
Yes. And I think that's a really good point, because you always hear that stat about Lamar. I think he actually broke it last year, but that was that stat about, oh, he's never won a game. He trailed at halftime. What's missing in that conversation is, do you know who the best quarterback in football is at getting a lead at halftime? It's Lamar Jackson, and that's an important skill to have. So, you know, I do think there's valid criticisms to have, but it's so funny. You know, you go back, I went back and I was reading a book from during the offseason in the NFL about like the 1960s, like the 60s, 70s, and it was talking about Tarkenton, and it was like, man, when are one of these running quarterbacks ever going to win a Super Bowl? And it's just like, you know, our idea of what a running quarterback is changes, right? Like if you brought Patrick Mahomes to the 70s, you'd be like, man, this guy, you know, he feels like he's from a different planet. And yet, you know, he's been successful. So I really think it's about, you know, it's a valid criticism, but I do think the lines there are so thin and we sort of shift them a bit. So I'll be intrigued to see. You know, I think with Lamar, the criticism is totally valid, and then everyone knows it, right? I mean, even the Ravens know it. If you're in that locker room, if you're in that building, you have to know, okay, we're going to be an 11-12 win team if Lamar is healthy, and yet nothing really matters for us until we get to the postseason, and that might struggle to keep you motivated during the regular season. I don't know. It's a really unique situation, I think, there really versus anywhere else in football.
Give me the one guy from the past. Okay, let's not go 90s. Let's go earlier than 90s.
Oh,
that
gosh.
Would have been perfect for this day and age in the way football's played.
Oh, gosh, this is a tough question. I was born in 84, so I have to go back to my
okay.
Tarkenton, I feel like, is cheating because I keep mentioning him.
Sure.
But I feel like Tarkenton is a thing where, you know, ability to extend plays, ability to work out of structure. I mean, when you go back and watch games, there's actually a guy on YouTube who's incredible, it's a guy on YouTube who goes back and he will, like, basically upscale old games into HD. And,
oh, love him. I watch him all the time.
Right. And, like, you know, you go back and a lot of things are revealed. You know, it's a lot of nostalgia about, like, oh, the game used to be better in all these ways. In some ways, it was better. In a lot of ways, it was not. And, you know, seeing Tarkenton play and just seeing his ability to create out of structure, I think is something that, you know, you train for now in a way you didn't train for back then. You know, how many teams in the 70s were doing scramble drills? How many teams in the 70s had wide receivers who were, you know, great on double moves, who were great creating after the route was over? You know, frankly, a lot of teams didn't have many wide receivers on the field. And if you're running a scramble drill and you have four wide receivers on the field, it's going to look a lot better than when you have two tight ends and a fullback. So,
Sure. You
know, to me, I think Tarkenton is the guy where, you know, obviously,
that's a good one
for sure, but plug him in.
No, that's a really good one from that era. I mean, I could so see him, you know, running zone read. Now, he was a little guy.
Yeah.
You probably wouldn't want quarterback counter or quarterback sweep, but he would have been phenomenal. You know who would have been excellent, actually, and I've talked to him about this before. Joe Theismann was not only a good runner, he was a really good ball handler, and he would have been excellent in that kind of an offense as well. All right, I'm running out of time here, so I do want to get your thoughts on Jaden Daniels and Washington's offense so far through three games.
So exciting. I mean, obviously, when you put up the numbers he did, make the pass he did, you know, in that game, nothing I'm going to say that's going to poke holes in that. He was incredible. I think what I like from him is I'm seeing him transcend the offense. You know, there's some stuff in the offense, some of the screens I don't love. There hasn't been a lot of verticality from week to week. It was better last week, I think. I think last week was the best game plan they had, and they were also protecting really well, and so that gave Jaden Daniels more time to work with. But, you know, it feels like it isn't just about Jaden Daniels creating out of structure. It isn't just Jaden Daniels making magic happen. I think there's moments where that happens, but I think he's working well within the structure of the offense. He's working through his progression, not just, you know, I'm going to look at one guy and then I'm going to tuck in and run. And there's something wrong with that in a vacuum. Like, if you get 10 yards, great. But I think we're seeing him grow more comfortable within the context of the offense. And then he has those moments where he can transcend, the moments where, you know, Terry McLaurin's going to say, hey, I'm going to be open. I'm going to run a set or go, get me the football. And he can make those throws. He can take those hits. You want to see him protect himself more. We saw a slide, I think a really good slide, actually, against the Bengals.
Yeah.
But, you know, a little more protection when he's running would be helpful. When he's on the sidelines, Lamar is the master at this. Lamar is so good at avoiding big hits. I think that would be nice. But, you know, I think you can't be anything but thrilled about what Jaden Daniels has done so far. I think you're seeing a very accurate quarterback, a smart quarterback, a quarterback who he looks like the, you know, he looks like he's the furthest along of these rookies in this class by a considerable margin, which I think is really exciting.
So what do you think it means for the team this year? I mean, there's a lot of focus on down the road. I mean, they're 2-1 with a chance to get to 3-1 right now. What kind of year can they have?
They can be a playoff team. I mean, Kevin, I wrote about this before the year when I was talking about the team's likely to improve. And I said this, and I said this about anybody, you know, who has a situation like this. The most likely factor when it comes to teams making sort of dramatic leaps immediately is improvements of head coaching and improvements of quarterback. And we'll see about Dan Quinn. I think Dan Quinn's a good coach. I don't want to insult Ron Rivera. I think Ron Rivera, you know, maybe a little past his peak, but I think certainly not a bad coach. But Jaden Daniels is a major upgrade. And when you have that quarterback upgrade, not only does it make the players around you better, but it also makes, I think, a lot of decisions for your team easier. I think it makes a lot of your processes easier. It changes the way you can coach because you can be more aggressive on defense. You can trust that, you know, your running game is going to be fine. You don't have to have as good of an offensive line. Like, C.J. Stroud made so many players on that Houston offense look better last year and made the defense look better last year. So if Jaden Daniels is this guy, maybe not the guy he was last week because that was incredible, but maybe, you know, the guy who's been in totality this season in a division where the Cowboys don't look great, the Giants are a bad football team. I don't think the Eagles look great. I don't know how you feel about them, but they are not look great to me this year. I mean, this is a wide open division, and Washington could very easily be this year's version of the Houston Texans.
I actually think the Eagles are better this year. I think Barkley just alone makes them.
Barkley's great, no question.
A much better team. Real quickly, on the five undefeateds, if we take KC and Buffalo out of the equation, because of course they are contenders, Minnesota, Seattle, Pittsburgh, if I told you one of those has a legit shot to get to the Super Bowl, which one is it?
I think I would say Seattle. And
really?
It is. Yeah. Pittsburgh, I mean, they all have quarterbacks you have questions about, but I think Geno Smith is the best of those quarterbacks, the most accurate of those quarterbacks. I think they can run the football when they have Kenneth Walker, who, you know, obviously missed the past couple of weeks, but they were very run heavy week one. And I believe in Mike McDonald. And his ability to break down your protections, his ability to create free rushers, his ability to get more out of your guys than you had from the prior regime or the prior coaching staff, I think is legitimate. I mean, so many players in Baltimore, not just, you know, Kyle Hamilton, not just now David Adebike, young guys who were drafted really high, and the Ravens do a great job of developing those guys, but someone like Jadeveon Clowney, I mean, someone like Kyle Van Noy, guys who are on the street in midseason, you know, like they look like stars in that defense. And he has a lot of talent there to work with. Pete Carroll, they drafted a lot on the defensive side of the football, and they look significantly better. And I think they're going to be better as the year goes along. They played a pretty easy schedule, to be fair, but that division looks very questionable. The Rams banged up, the Cardinals, I think they've been better than people expect. The Niners banged up with injuries as well. The NFC, I think I'd go for an NFC team over an AFC team in general, but maybe this is me having a lot of faith in Geno. To me, Geno is one of the three most accurate quarterbacks in all of football, and I think if you have a running game for him, he's going to be just fine.
You're so right. I mean, he's always been able to sling it. I mean, even when he wasn't playing and wasn't, you know, and thought to be done, just like, you know, Andy Dalton and Sam Darnold and, you know, all these guys that we should never really give up on. But Geno Smith's always been able to throw the football. That's one thing he could do.
Yeah.
I love talking to you. I appreciate it. Thanks, Bill.
Anytime.
Yep. Bill Barnwell, everybody, at Bill Barnwell on X on Twitter. All right, time for final score predictions with a footnote. You want to go first?
Sure, I'd love to go first. I loved what I saw on Monday. I think them scoring every single possession was insanity. I do not think that continues. I mean, it would be nuts. If they score every single possession again on Sunday, we should be dancing in the streets come Monday morning. So I do not think that's going to happen. I think this game is going to go a little sideways. I like Arizona to win it, though I do think the over smashes. So I'm going to say Arizona 28, Washington 25. My footnote is that Jaden Daniels once again looks really good and has three passing touchdowns.
All right. On Monday night, you picked them to win. And I picked them to lose on a walk-off field goal 30-27. I think that's some good mojo for me to pick them to lose by three again. So I'm going Arizona 34, Washington 31 in overtime on a field goal that they get. That would mean that Washington didn't do anything with their drive. Or it meant, I'll go Arizona 37, Washington 31 in overtime, which means Washington never got the ball in overtime because that's only a playoff rule where you get the shot after. We saw that in the Super Bowl. I think the footnote is Brian Robinson Jr. over 100 yards in this game rushing. Going to pick him to kind of lose close games and see if that works for a while. Back on Monday. Enjoy the football weekend. Chris Russell's up next.